ABC Listen.
Yeah, did you hear this week that the ABC show Q&A is coming to an end? About 40 jobs will be lost when it wraps up after, gosh, is it that long? 18 years on air. You might have also heard this week that the project on Channel 10 is not being renewed. That one's been going for about 16 years and there'll be another 100 jobs going when it gets axed. You would have heard that expression before, getting the axe. It's what we say when a TV show or a radio show or even an individual's role at either of those things is terminated. It's a term that harkens back to the dark ages, back to the past. But have you heard the term legacy media? That's what television is classified as now. Again, the word legacy makes us think of the past. And the reason for a lot of these long-running TV shows being axed is that our viewing habits are changing. So what does the future of media consumption look like? Will free-to-air TV soon become a thing of the past too? Well, to answer those questions, we've sought the expertise of Professor Amanda Lotz, who leads the Transforming Media Industries Research Program at Queensland's University of Technology. She's an author, a co-author, an editor of 10 books that explore TV and the media industries. So she should be all over it. Hi, Amanda. Welcome to Nightlife.
Thanks so much for having me.
Can you give us a brief overview of how the viewing habits of Australians are changing, Amanda?
Well, I think the best word to use is probably diversifying. We're not necessarily seeing swapping. It's not that Australians have gone from using one kind of technology to only another technology, but our diets have become full of lots of ways of accessing video, in this case, if we're talking about television, so that it's not just, a linear television feed that's the schedule, so when something's on at a certain time, but we're also taking advantage of the on-demand services that those very same channels offer, so things like iView or 10play. Then there's the paid streaming services, Netflix, Amazon, Disney Plus, among the most used in Australia. And then in addition to all that, a lot of what we call social media has become a space of watching video as well. The Meta company announced last year that 60% of the time that folks are spending on either Facebook or Instagram is spent watching video. So then you add that to YouTube and TikTok, and we're still consuming tons of video, but we're consuming it in a lot of different places.
Now, are we seeing big differences in viewing habits between, say, metropolitan and regional Australians?
To our data, which at this point hasn't been, we haven't done surveys as broadly as I'd like at this point, but actually we haven't seen a lot of variation by geography.
That's very interesting. So, yeah, because I would have imagined perhaps there'd be more sticking with the kind of linear TV in the regions. But no, you're not seeing that.
No, I think part of that is that there's also a limitation of options in the regions when it comes to the range of channels available. And so I think the big question is the availability of a strong internet signal, and that then really does open up quite a universe of possible video.
So, Amanda, what about what's going on? You've talked about people watching a lot of videos on social media. How much of that is in relation to news consumption?
Well, it depends a bit on how we define news. A lot of times the researchers are using a definition sort of about public events and things like that. And in that case, not that much. But what we've really found is that people have tuned their social media feeds in many cases to deliver the news and information that is particularly interesting to them. And so it's almost like they've curated a personal television channel about the four or five interests that they have. So they do see maybe a lot of news, but it might be news about their favorite English Premier League team, some new recipes, some new crafts. It's really kind of amazing, the array of interests that we see Australians pursuing through their social media feeds.
But young people generally aren't seeking out, I guess, a broad swathe of news, would you suggest?
Well, honestly, we don't have good data at this point for what we'd call young people. If under our surveys at this point have only been for 18s and older. I think what we do see, though, is people able to pursue the news that is particularly interesting to them. So we certainly, in our interviews, we had, I'd say, devoted ABC fans who, it's not just that they're going to see what's the news or that the news is on, but that's very specifically what they want. They're checking headlines. They have, they're following ABC in their feeds. In other cases, we heard about folks in their late 20s, early 30s that have particular news. I think we can call them news shows on YouTube that they watch. And what's compelling about that is that the host of those shows is presenting it in a way that is interesting to them or focusing on the kinds of details that they want to see. So I think that it is a real challenge for the industry that for decades was really able to channel a large audience into what the news provider decided it was going to provide. If you wanted the news, it's, you know, one of these three channels. And, you know, if you don't like it, well, those are the three channels. And we increasingly have generations of media users who are more and more aware that there are many more options out there and they are increasingly pursuing them.
So you can decide that the news is whatever you want it to be in a way. I want my news to be about this, that and the other, as you say, rather than what the TV station has decided. Professor Amanda Lotz is here, leader of the Transforming Media Industries Research Program at Queensland's University of Technology. What about the role of trust, though, and the idea of coming to a news organisation because you know that it has the runs on the board, it's got the journalists who are paid to go and do the investigating, you know that they've checked all their facts. Is that important for young people?
I think it's important to some people. I think there's also an enormous frustration with the content that they're being provided in terms of a sense that that there are still major stories that aren't effectively being covered, that it's not what's interesting to them. And I think you sound like a very news-interested person. I am as well. And I suspect folks listening at this hour on a Friday night maybe. But we have data from around the globe that shows that really less than 20% of media consumers in many countries, not just Australia, it's 17% that classify themselves as news lovers. And those are folks that are watching news multiple times a day. Most people are not seeking out news. It finds its way into their lives because they're in the car and headlines play, or they have news notifications on their phone, or they see headlines. But the idea that, you know, most of the population is deeply invested in consuming news isn't the case and hasn't been the case.
So is it a fair fee that most of the population ever was deeply invested in the news then?
I'd expect so. And I think, again, we sort of have to start pulling things apart. Where does that idea come from? It is still the case that quite a few Australians watch a nightly newscast. But if we were to take a look at those newscasts, particularly on the commercial networks, I think if you're not regularly viewing them, you might be surprised what's there. If you are really regularly viewing them and stop and think about what is being presented as news, as in this is the important content that Australians need to know about, I think that there's become quite a gap in what that information is. And in that case, I'm not convinced that there's actually that much difference between the depth and quality of information that many are managing to find in other ways now that there are so many more sources accessible to them.
Yeah. A few contributions from our listeners, Amanda. Rachel says, after using streaming services, I can't deal with the non-stop commercial breaks of free-to-air TV anymore. Even when using apps like 9Now and 7plus, I constantly say I would pay money just so I don't have to sit through constant 2 minutes of ads. That one from Rachel. Robin says we should have more Australian content. For example, she doesn't like, you know, that Planet America. She reckons that should be Planet Australia. Tony says, I've totally changed my viewing habits. I no longer watch TV in its true form. I'm very selective with what I watch, and I now stream all my free-to-air, predominantly the ABC on iView and streaming services. Now, what about the idea of appointment viewing, Amanda? Has that completely disappeared, or are there exceptions?
Sports is a big exception. And I'd say after sport, I think there are a few sort of reality competition shows, so we could almost also regard those as sport, that for certain audiences also will compel live viewership. But I think your callers just hit it on the head exactly. If we think about how we consume other media, like for decades, we've been able to read, you know, if you're reading a book, you can read it when you want. You can start in the beginning of the chapter. You can read 10 pages. You can read 100 pages. We could listen to music in whatever unit we wanted as well, if we owned the album. A lot of these technologies have given us that kind of capability over video as well, and it's taken you know really two decades to fully reach you know a large amount of the population. But I think what's happened is that people appreciate the convenience of being able to incorporate the shows that they're interested into their lives on their own time, rather than sort of the way that the schedule held us hostage or required us to plan our lives around television.
That's right. I can't go out on Tuesday night because whatever show is on, whereas that doesn't need to matter anymore at all. Now, Amanda, what about, I mean, we know that historically there's been a real relationship where the news services are funded effectively by advertising, well, the commercial ones, obviously. So how much is what is going on with the fall in numbers of people watching and the diversification of how we're watching? How is that affecting income streams for traditional media?
Again, we have to sort of look at it sector by sector. So what has happened over, it's 25 years now, amazingly enough, but over the last 25 years, which has been the gradual introduction of digital, more and more of advertisers' dollars that used to go to print newspapers and to broadcast television and to a degree radio has moved increasingly to social media, search, and other new places that advertisers can reach audiences. And so the data is just kind of stunning when you look at the share of Australian advertising spend. And In 2007 is the first year that we really see it registering what is lumped together as online, which is a lot of different categories. But that's now over 60% of advertising spend, and that's not unusual. And that has happened at the same time new advertisers and a significant scale of new advertising money has not arrived. And so the consequences of that have been quite dire. So we don't see necessarily entire media sectors dying. They're not gone. But commercial television needs to be looking a lot at the newspaper sector right now, because what came the process that happened to newspapers in the first decade of the century is now very much well underway for commercial television as well.
How do you push back against that, Amanda, or adapt to it? What could we learn from newspapers about what traditional broadcast media can do?
Well, I think if we look for the cases that have of success, it's really tough to do it by relying on advertising alone. A lot of the print outlets that have done it most successfully, they've shifted to relying more on consumer payment, so some level of subscription. They have recognized, and sort of once you start asking consumers to pay, you also have to start delivering them something of particular value. And so I think it's all of this is far more about advertising than it is, I think, about the media themselves. So what happened to print journalism really wasn't about the journalism. It wasn't that anyone was upset about it so much as the business model that was built around bundling together a bunch of different content and attracting, you know, the attention of eyeballs for advertisers, that just went away. And honestly, the same thing is happening to television. And so right now we have three commercial broadcasters that, as to your point, have cut out a lot of the kind of content that used to attract attention. They rely pretty much and they continue to spend significantly on sport. But beyond that, it's really hard to say that there's much compelling viewers to keep turning up. And that's one thing that we really heard loudly in our interviews, is just a sense that there's not much there anymore. And so I think it's really necessary to start thinking about how do we have any broadcasting in the future? One part of that is that we probably need to have fewer channels or networks in order to, so that maybe one or two can have enough advertising, be able to attract enough attention to have enough advertising to be able to support a more robust range of options
so
and programs.
How far in the future, Amanda, could you see the three broadcasters, the commercial broadcasters in Australia becoming two?
Tomorrow. Wow. In all honesty, Channel 10 is owned by Paramount, which is a U.S. company that's in the middle of a merger that's been, you know, on the verge of going sideways for quite some time. So what kind of commitment do they have to keeping that station, to keeping their global enterprises? It's not clear. And I think then the question is, you know, they put that up for sale. Are there any buyers? And I think...
Because is there profit to be made?
That is the issue. It's not that anyone is necessarily, you know, I think a decade ago, maybe some different decisions could have been made in terms of programming and strategy. But at this point, the idea of the business really needs to be radically reconfigured rather than trying to continue what worked in an environment when people had far less choice.
I wonder if Channel 10 has tried over the past, say, 10, 15 years, I mean, the project's a great example, to pitch itself to that younger audience, where I think the other two stations probably still have more of the older audience, that the 50-pluses, perhaps. And I wonder if that actually gives them a little bit more longevity, because some of those people might be a little bit more loyal to watching linear television.
Yeah, I think the age piece is there. I think the challenge, though, and I, to your point, I do think that trying to do something different was the best strategy available. I think that the issue is just how significantly young folks have left any kind of television viewing behavior. And it's if we stop and think about it, we now have a full adult generation that never knew that environment of sort of having to watch what's on, or that having to negotiate one screen in the house with a bunch of other people. And so,
so you know, I get that on Monday, you get that on Tuesday. I remember those
exactly.
Spots,
yeah. And so, you know, the idea that those people, even though they're now moving into having families and having a lot of demands on their lives, that there's so many ways that they can spend their media time. Very little that the broadcast channels can offer really speaks with any kind of specificity to audiences that are used to hearing things that are more directly of interest to them. And so they are spending that time instead after our long day of work and taking care of the kids. You know, they're scrolling their social media for an hour and going to bed instead.
And I mean, if you look at something like YouTube, on the surface, there might be a lot of dog videos or whatever it is, but I'm constantly astounded at the fascinating educational, you know, rabbit holes that people can spend their lives looking at, because there's actually so much to learn when you look at the, you know, some of the videos on there, that it's kind of not surprising. I mean, you can find anything that interests you there, or if you switch the telly on, you've got, what, three or four choices, and if you don't like any of them, well, what are you going to do?
Yes, YouTube is amazing, and it's difficult to talk about at this point because it's so many things. But if you haven't checked in lately and still have that early YouTube perception, one of the things that they found a lot of the viewing at this point is long form. Increasingly, networks, so the Channel 4 out of the UK, the CBC out of Canada, they are putting on entire programs. They're the same programs that they put on linear, that they put on their on-demand. And what they found is that they aren't cannibalizing their audience. They've discovered an entire new audience who's finding those programs and watching them on YouTube. And I honestly think part of it is that they can find them because there's a more robust search mechanism, and that more and more people are going there as a first stop because there is just so much volume and you have an ability to watch it on demand, not with a terrible commercial load, and find, to your point, just an amazing array of whatever you might happen to search.
So, but if Channel 4, for example, are doing that, are they able to monetize that in some way?
They are. They are selling. I mean, so YouTube historically has shared 45% of advertising dollars with professional level creators. And in that case, they are allowing Channel 4 to sell that ad time as well. So I don't know that that kind of money would be enough to make content in the first instance. But it's something, it's a supplemental revenue stream on top of the revenue that they're able to earn in other places, or, you know, government funding in the case of at least the CBC.
I should ring someone upstairs at the ABC, say we ought to get some more of our shows on YouTube by the sounds of it there. Hey, Amanda, thanks so much for being with us on Night Live tonight to take a look at the future of television.
My pleasure. Have a good night.
That's Professor Amanda Lotz, leader of the Transforming Media Industries Research Program at Queensland's University of Technology.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.